Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The terrible weekend shootings in Tucson, Arizona have become the American conversation. Is this a watershed moment in our angry politics? Should it be? Are you prepared to say it was one crazy, troubled killer? What are the roots of this, and what now? This hour on Point, the roots of Tucson, the fallout from Tucson. You can join the conversation. What's happened here in the Tucson parking lot, in our national political culture? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. At the top of this hour this morning, a moment of silence for all those six who died in that hail of bullets in the Safeway supermarket parking lot. The congresswoman who took the bullet directly through the brain, back to front, through and through, the doctor said, still clinging to life at this moment. Here she was, Representative Gabrielle Giffords. This was in August of 2009, telling Arizona Public Media that she was not going to back down from talking with constituents, even when it came to very tough issues like health care.
My belief is you got to do your job. I mean, your job is to be a representative, and that's not just a job title, it's a job description. So if you're going to represent people, you got to get out and make sure you understand what they're thinking.
You've got to get out and understand what they're thinking, and that's exactly what she was doing on Saturday morning. A Congress on the corner is how she described it. Here's Arizona Republican Senator John Kyle on CBS's Face the Nation, cautioning against jumping to conclusions about the motivations of the shooter.
It's probably giving him too much credit to ascribe a coherent political philosophy to him. We just have to acknowledge that there are some mentally unstable people in this country. Who knows what motivates them to do what they do? And then they can commit terrible crimes like this. And I would just note, Gabrielle Giffords, a fine representative from Tucson, I think would be the first to say, don't rush to judgment here.
He might be right, but then last year when Bullseye was put on her district by the Sarah Palin's Facebook page over health care reform and how to vote there, she said, be careful. That kind of symbol has consequences. In Arizona, Pima County Sheriff Clarence Dupnik has been wrestling with all this. Here he was at that now quite widely touted news conference. Megyn Kelly of Fox News asked him yesterday about the Saturday shooting and what influence angry political rhetoric may have had on the killer, how close a tie he can really make.
Do you have reason to believe that this particular suspected killer was taking in information or was in any way influenced by the vitriol or the rhetoric that you're referring to that, you know, has been out on the airwaves?
If your question is specific, I have to be specific and say I don't have that information yet. The investigation is in its very initial phases, but my belief, and I've been watching what's been going on in this country for the last 75 years, and I've been a police officer for over 50 years. There's no doubt in my mind that when a number of people, night and day, try to inflame the public, that there's going to be some consequences from doing that. And I think it's irresponsible to do that.
Consequences, the word of the day of the weekend, consequences. On the other hand, you heard John Kyle there saying, let's not rush to judgment, and the sheriff himself saying there's more to learn here. We're going to dive in this hour with a lot of different people. We begin in Washington with Gail Shattuck, Capitol Hill correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. Gail, thank you for joining us here.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Also with us today from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. Jack, thank you very much for being here.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Gail.
Gail, give us a sense of how this is being processed by other members of Congress. They all go out into their constituencies. They all need to talk with those in their electorates. How are they responding to what happened to Gabby Gifford in Tucson on Saturday?
Well, you know, it's a very somber sense in the Capitol itself, but lawmakers have dealt with this many times before. And the default position seems to be, we're representatives, we have to be with our people.
Many times before, like what?
Well, 1954, there were shooters in the visitor center, 200 House members on the floor, five of them were wounded, you know, hails of bullets. And so there was a debate afterwards, well, should we put a glass wall, bulletproof wall, around the visitors' gallery.
But, Gail, that's half a century ago, and that's in the Capitol building. That's already deeply protected. What about getting out, you know, really with their constituents?
Well, you know, the principle is the same. No one wants to say, elect me, and then I'm going to be behind a glass wall for 2 years, and then I'll come out and see you again. But there are efforts to, you know, quietly do things, and, you know, they're not even, they certainly don't want me to talk about them, and most of them I haven't heard about. But the sense of seeking harder sites for meetings with constituents. How about a court building, or a city hall, some place where you have to go through a metal detector, not, as has become the place to be, the aisle of a shopping center, or outside a Safeway.
Jack Beatty, this feels like a watershed to me. I mean, in a shopping center, in a grocery store, in a parking lot, that's where the people are. That's where the representatives of a democracy ought to be. What do you see unfolding in the aftermath of this shooting, Jack?
Well, I think at the least we're going to see more guards, more police, more security people at these occasions. And that itself, you know, is a little bit chilling when you think about it. I remember watching Arlen Specter's meeting, I think in the summer of 2009, one of his constituent events, and someone got up and was quite vociferous, and the security people just descended on him and started to take the fellow out. Well, he wasn't being violent. He was just being loud and obnoxious. That was a chilling of speech, and I'd hate to see that as a consequence of this.
There is a lot we want to learn in this hour. We're going to learn and think about in the weeks ahead. Gail Jackson-Tenby joining us right now from Montgomery, Alabama, is Mark Potok, director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project. It tracks extremist groups across the country. Mark Potok, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
What do you see having gone on here? Is this an outcome of our political culture? Is this the act of one very troubled young guy?
Well, I certainly think it's an act of one troubled guy, but at the same time, I think one can at least make the case that the Pima County Sheriff made, that in some way this seems to be, a person who's pretty clearly insane or very ill, but react kind of bouncing off of things that are happening in the larger political culture. I read through pretty much everything I could see of this, the things this man posted, and, you know, they're very, very difficult to interpret. But, you know, I think there are a number of clues in there. And you can see that he got a few of his ideas from certain people on the radical right, really conspiracy theorists. I don't mean to suggest that he is some kind of political ideologue, or he has a real coherent political philosophy. I think
he had a lot of stuff on his bookshelf, though. I mean, he had Karl Marx, Communist Manifesto. He had Ayn Rand, We the Living. He had Ken Kesey, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, plus Peter Pan and the Phantom Toll Booth.
I know about the reading list, and I think that, you know, there is a kind of theme that runs through it, which is kind of the individual versus the oppressive totalitarian state. That's an odd reading, perhaps, of the Communist Manifesto and Mein Kampf, but I do think that's the thread that seems to run through all or at least most of the books.
We've got a question on just that front from Montgomery, Alabama, where you are, Mark. Ronnie's calling from Montgomery. Ronnie, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you. The question I've got, and nobody's asking or has the courage to ask, is the shooter, what was his affiliation? Was he Democrat, Republican, Independent? Did he volunteer at any place to campaign? Why isn't anybody researching that or asking the question?
Ronnie, we'll ask it right now. I appreciate it. Mark Potok, what about, you gave us a kind of a general picture. Maybe it is just a general picture, but can it be nailed down more concretely to this shooter's
politics?
Well,
I don't think that it's known what his political affiliation was at all, or that of his parents. What we know is that he went to an event of the representative, Gabby Giffords, a few years ago. And, you know, she was essentially the leading representative of the federal government in his town, in Tucson. Let me mention a couple of other kinds of connections that I see. And this is not to blame the Republican Party remotely. I think its connections are more to the extreme right. For instance, he talks a lot about gold and silver, the only real currency being backed by gold and silver. That is very much a core idea of the kind of anti-government patriot movement, the militia movement. He also talks, and this is one of the strangest parts of what he has to say, he talks about the government using English grammar to control the people. And as far out as that sounds, in fact, there is a particular conspiracy theorist, a guy in Milwaukee named David Wynn Miller, who's very much associated with the Patriot Movement. And Miller claims that the government, just that, the government controls us through its use of grammar. He claims to have discovered a quote-unquote truth language. You know, if you only use this language, you will throw off the shackles of the tyrannical federal government and so on.
Mark, that's fascinating. Hold that for a minute. We'll come back to it. Gail, I've just got you for another minute here. Do you see, talk about language. What about the language of our sitting politicians and political leaders, for that matter, political, you know, media pundits? Do you see language changing after this event? Do you see people saying, wait a minute, we have got to cool it?
Well, I'll give you an interesting example. The National Journal today, in its print edition, the cover says, "Seeing red, John Boehner's troops are spoiling for a fight, but the speaker wants to aim before he shoots." Now, that is a typical sort of pre-weekend headline, but it's changed on their website. And that's what I'm hearing from a number of journalists today. I mean, I use the word target quite regularly. It's a nice, punchy word.
Well, I mean, we came up out of a hunting culture and an agrarian culture, many Americans in the wilderness, rifles were out there, but that doesn't mean, what about the kind of, Second Amendment solution talk, which is even more explicit? Does that go away, or is that just with us now?
You know, it's interesting. If you played just a sentence beyond the John Kyle segment that you played,
yep,
you would hear him say, Gabby was opposed, Gabby supported Second Amendment rights. He was trying
to... Well, she did.
She did.
But that's different from Second Amendment solutions to political confrontations.
That's right.
Second Amendment solutions sounds like pulling out a gun. Gail Shattuck with the Christian Science Monitor in Washington. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the fallout from Tucson to Washington of this weekend's mass killing, the world of the killer we're looking at, and the world of American politics now. Here's Republican Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rogers from Washington State saying, yes, political rhetoric has become increasingly heated, but cautioning against automatically ascribing any political motive to the man who shot Congresswoman Giffords.
As far as we know, he's not tied to a political movement, and this wasn't a politically motivated act. His favorite books are The Communist Manifesto and Mein Kampf. And I think it's important that we recognize that this is an individual that has mental challenges and is... And we need to act appropriately in dealing with him and making sure that justice prevails here.
Indeed, we do. Of course, she failed to mention there, yes, the Communist Manifesto in his YouTube reading list, but also Ayn Rand's We the Living, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Alice's Adventures, Alice in Wonderland. It's quite a list. Here's from CBS Face the Nation, Democratic Representative Steny Hoyer of Maryland, saying we need to be careful, particularly the media, about incendiary rhetoric.
Far too many broadcasts now in so many outlets have the intent of inciting people to opposition, to anger, to thinking the other side is less than moral. And I think that is a context in which somebody who is mentally unbalanced can somehow feel justified in taking this kind of action. And I think we need to all take cognizance of that and be aware that what we say can, in fact, have consequences.
Steny Hoyer there. Jack Beatty is with us. We'll hear in just a moment from Mona Charon and Bill McKenzie with us right now from Obispo, California. Former Senator Bob Bennett, former Republican senator from Utah, defeated in the GOP primary this past year by a Tea Party candidate. Senator Bennett, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Really like to get your thoughts on what we've all seen over this weekend. How are you processing this? What do we need to take away from this?
Well, the first thing I think we need to remind ourselves is that this particular individual, from all indications, is deranged. And we should not try to extrapolate from his actions attribute motives to movements or other groups. That having been said, I agree with a lot of the folks who are saying we need to turn down the rhetoric in the overall political discussion. I remember during my campaign, or just prior to my campaign, after I had cast a vote with President Bush in behavior in support of the immigration
yes.
bill, there were death threats for all of us who had cast such votes on the talk radio. And one particular talk radio show gave out our home addresses and recommended that everybody show up at our homes. He had my address correctly.
Wow.
Show up at our homes on the 4th of July with a gun, demand that we resign immediately, and if we did not agree to resign our offices, to, quote, remove us from office. And then the talk show host said, and you will not be prosecuted because it is your constitutional right. That kind of thing is pretty chilling and obviously has no place in political dialogue.
Who or what is pushing that kind of language, that kind of suggestion?
Well, we tend to demonize our opponent, not just disagree with them, but demonize our opponents and say that the country is in peril if this particular person is elected. And so then it becomes a patriotic act to save the country from the individual that would destroy it. I supported John McCain in the election, but I happen to know Barack Obama. I served with him as a senator. And however much I might disagree with him, Barack Obama is not an evil person bent on destroying the United States. And those who think he is either don't know him or don't want to know him. I voted against virtually everything he proposed while I was a senator, but that doesn't mean that I agree in any sense with those who say he's dangerous. It's one thing to be wrong. It's another thing to be dangerous. And to equate the two is itself very dangerous.
What would you say to fellow Republicans to reel in some of this out there language and symbolism and suggestion, you know, that's sort of right on the verge of violence? And what would you say to Democrats about how to help reel this in?
Well, I think you're right to equate the two, because some of the nastiest rhetoric I have seen in my political career has come from Democrats.
Well, I didn't exactly equate, but I am asking about both for sure.
Yeah, you're certainly asking about both. And I'd like to quote to them the comment my wife made. My wife is not a political person. She has put up with my political career rather than be a political junkie herself. And she said, as we were hearing people during the Clinton years saying things about Hillary Clinton, and particularly then when she started to run for president, what a terrible threat she represented to all of our freedom. And she said, you know, it's hard to hate somebody that you know. And let's understand, you don't know these people. I don't know Sarah Palin, and I see the kinds of things that many Democrats are saying about her. I've never met her. I assume that if I did, I'd find her probably pretty good company. I know both President Obama and Michelle Obama, and they're the kind of people I'd like to have as neighbors.
Well,
even though I wouldn't necessarily agree with them, and we should keep that in mind on all portions of the political spectrum. You're condemning somebody you don't know, and you're only listening to people who make their living, if I may be so blunt, in terms of the kinds of ratings they can get by being extreme. The ratings go down when people start to moderate, and that means the income goes down. What we listen to, what we patronize on the air, can have an effect if we start to say, look, we're not going to listen to this kind of stuff anymore. The audience is going to shrink. And then the sponsors and the producers begin to say, wait a minute, we ought to have somebody else on the air.
So everybody has a hand in this in that sense. What we listen to, what we patronize in a way with our ears and therefore dollars has a lot to do with what the kind of culture we're going to live in. No question about that. Former Republican Senator Bob Bennett of Utah, we're grateful to you for being with us for a few minutes today. Thank you very much for joining us.
You bet. My pleasure.
With us right now from Washington, Mona Cher and syndicated columnist. Mona, welcome back to On Point. Good to have you.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And from Dallas, Texas, Bill McKenzie, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist at the Dallas Morning News. Bill, welcome. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Bill, first to you, what was your reaction to what we saw there in Tucson in those images from that parking lot?
Well, I want to echo what the senator just said. I think he just hit the nail right on the head on several different points. One is, it appears that we're looking at the works of a very mentally deranged individual, which then raises the question, what do we do with people who have these severe mental challenges? You know, for example, if he came into this community college where he was going to school, what do you do if you're the professor and you see this guy has some very serious issues? How do you handle a person like that while also respecting their civil liberty?
Well, they called him out. I mean, he was ejected from that college finally, but that just put him on the street.
Right. So then what happens to that individual once he hits the street and, and then he ends up doing what he does?
But what about the political culture, Bill, that he and we all are living in? Are we being goaded in this direction?
Right. Well, I guess what I'm trying to say, and I think this is what Bob Bennett was trying to say, mm-hmm. I don't think we necessarily can draw a straight line from his actions in that parking lot to the larger conversation going on in politics. Having said that, I think the senator is absolutely right. I guess we should use this as a moment to talk about restraint and greater civility. Our editorial page, the Dallas Morning News, has been writing about a civility series for the last year. And to be honest, this is kind of like telling people to eat their peas. You know, it's just something that is hard to make exciting. But it's a basic. It's a fundamental. And that if we don't get this right, we're going to mess up a lot of other things. So we need to keep working at it and keep, I hate to say this, I guess, use moments like this to talk about how we do have a more civil conversation. The last thing I would say, I love what the senator said about not reducing all of our political figures down to a caricature. Mm-hmm. And if there's anybody this has been made a caricature of was George W. Bush for the last eight years when he was in office. We've been on this show many times talking about Bush, and I've tried mm-hmm. to make the argument that he operates at different levels than meets the eye, but that never came through. And I would say the same thing about Obama. People reduce Obama down to the worst possible instincts, and they hang on that, and they just drive that home, and they really don't know the individual.
Bill, stand by in Dallas. Mona Charon, how do you see what happened on Saturday? On the one hand, we've got a very troubled young guy here. On the other hand, 20 people shot, 6 people dead, a U.S. congresswoman with a bullet through her brain at a time when the political discourse in this country has become so hot, and a lot of the imagery, and I'm sorry, Mona, but I got to say it, a lot of the imagery of gun sights and lock and load and don't retreat, reload, a lot of that specifically sort of ammo-oriented imagery seems to me to have come from the right.
Well, it may seem that way to you, but I think that's because it's gotten disproportionate attention from the press. I mean, on the website, the Daily Kos, he had painted bullseyes on various conservative figures. He has described conservatives as being the American Taliban. The president himself has been known to use this kind of imagery. He said, "When somebody brings a knife to a fight, you bring a gun."
Who said that, Mona?
The President Obama, quoting the Untouchables. He also said during the last campaign that the job of the voter was to punish our enemies and reward our friends, enemies being Republicans. There's a lot of rhetoric around. There's a lot of criticism to be had on all sides. What I find disheartening is this tendency to try to say that it's the responsibility of the right. I will join, the senator and Mr. McKenzie and all of your other guests in pleading for more civility in politics, but I also want a little fairness.
It's a Democratic congresswoman with a bullet through her head.
Sorry?
It's a Democratic congresswoman with a bullet through her head.
Yes, but when the Unabomber, Ted Kaczynski, supposedly inspired by by left-wing radical environmentalism, I don't recall conservatives arguing that it was the fault of Al Gore that Ted Kaczynski took this disgusting action. This mm-hmm. temptation to say, you see, it's those ideas I don't like on the right that lead to violence. That is a temptation that you need to resist because there is no connection. There are nutcases all over the place in America, unfortunately, and I actually think there's a big issue about how we deal with mental health, which ought to be the focus of our conversation.
You mean the mentally unstable who are in the streets because, of all the institutions that were closed down, funding withdrawn?
Because we have both on the left and the right a misplaced libertarianism when it comes to treating the mentally ill.
Wasn't that Ronald Reagan's big push?
It was a bipartisan effort. Both Democrats and Republicans joined together to close down the mental institutions. There were good reasons at the time, but mental health treatment has come a long way since. And efforts that have been undertaken in many states, including New York, to require outpatient treatment of people who have demonstrated violent tendencies have had very good results. But There's a reluctance, and I say that there's this is both on the right and the left. There is a reluctance to see what needs to be done because, and it's understandable to a degree, because there had been abuses in the past of mental health treatment. But we really need to take seriously the question of forcing some people to be in outpatient treatment when they have demonstrated violent tendencies.
Jack Beatty, we want to be fair. We want to be careful. We want to be civil on this, of all days. But where does that leave us in looking accurately at what's going on in this country in terms of political discourse and the violent rhetoric around it?
I'd be hard put to quantify it. My impression is that there's been more of this sort of rhetoric on the Republican side, and that is in the last 2 years, and that is because, of course, the policy initiatives have been coming from the Democrats. The Republicans have been attacking them. They've been using hyperbole and hyperbole charged with this, lock and load aura.
Do you remember Democrats before talking about, encouraging their constituents to be armed and dangerous, encouraging Second Amendment solutions? Do you recall that?
I don't recall it. No. That does seem to me to be a new a threshold. However, not to sound like a Pollyanna, I'm encouraged that Sharon Angle lost. I'm encouraged also that Alan Grayson lost in Florida, the Democrat. I thought he was an incendiary. I'm encouraged that Sarah Palin does not seem to be catching fire beyond her very narrow base. I'm encouraged that Christine O'Donnell lost in Delaware. She seemed to me to be beyond the American except what's acceptable in American politics. So what I'm suggesting is maybe there's a correction out there. Maybe if you go too far, the voters say no, we can't support you.
Mona Sharon, we're up against big challenges and no doubt more tough times. Do you see political leaders ratcheting this down, reeling this back, or the other problem, getting further into this territory?
Look, I think that there is a bipartisan agreement among responsible leaders on all sides that extreme rhetoric has no place in American politics. But what's the evidence
of that? I mean, you mean just since Saturday morning? I certainly didn't see it before Saturday morning.
Look at the response. There was one politician, and I don't even know who it was. Who was it who said something about Second Amendment solutions? I don't even know who that was.
That was Sharon Angle.
Sharon Angle, okay.
Republican candidate for U.S. Senate.
She was defeated, and that comment was widely condemned. And yet, over the weekend, what did we see when this horrific act happened in Tucson? We had a very good statement from the new Speaker of the House. Mm-hmm. We had a very good statement from the President of the United States, both expressing the kind of civic virtue of the United States, which is we reject this kind of violence. It's an attack on one is an attack on all. Of course it's beyond the pale. Of course it's disgusting, and we all condemn it. And so the notion that somehow this is an outgrowth of right wing agitation or conservative politics or God forbid conservative philosophy.
Mona Sharon, we got to go right there. I'm afraid it's as long as I can stretch it. Thank you so much for joining us, listeners. We're talking about Tucson. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the fallout from Tucson to Washington of this weekend's mass killing, the world of the killer and the world of American politics, now with Bill McKenzie of the Dallas Morning News, Mark Potok, director of the Southern Poverty Law Center's Intelligence Project. Jack Beatty's here. Mona Charon mentioned President Obama's comments over the weekend. Here he is, the president, after the shooting in Tucson, of Congresswoman Gabrielle Gabby Giffords.
It's not surprising that today Gabby was doing what she always does, listening to the hopes and concerns of her neighbors. That is the essence of what our democracy is all about. That is why this is more than a tragedy for those involved. It is a tragedy for Arizona and a tragedy for our entire country.
We have feedback from all over the country. Here's Sally, who writes on the website, "I think it's a quantum leap to lay any blame on Sarah Palin. Her comments were obviously figurative. Let's get real." Then Enrique writes, "The one yelling fire in the theater is responsible for any person dying during the stampede. Sarah's been yelling fire for almost 3 years now." Robert in Burlington, Vermont. Robert, you're on the air.
Hi, this is just a lament for how things used to be like 2 days before the shooting, and an alternate vision. I just wish the rest of the country would be more like Vermont, but I'm afraid it's going to go the other way. Two days before, on Thursday, I was asked to do some help to set up for the Democratic Party just before the inauguration of the new governor.
Mm-hmm.
And I did my work, and I was off the hook, and I thought, well, what am I going to do with my time? So I went into the State House and witnessed a little bit of Vermont history. There was a diminutive sign that said, firearms prohibited, subject to search. There was no metal detector.
Mm-hmm.
There was no body search.
And in you went. Yep. And in you went.
Some of the women had their bags looked at. There's a couple of really friendly dogs that were supposed to be bomb-sniffing dogs. There was zilcho security, comparatively, even though there was a lot of cops. But I was within 6 to 10 feet of the procession of the officials going into the representatives' hall. I shook hands with the new governor after the ceremony. I could have changed Vermont history if I was an evil person.
And you didn't, and we shouldn't. But we've got to have that, Robert. We've got to have that in this country. That's our tradition, though. Lord knows it's been broken with gunfire too many times. But we've got to have that.
What's going to happen is they're going to have metal detectors now. Is what's going to happen after this Arizona incident?
Yeah, metal detectors, and I hope more. I hope a national conversation about where we are with each other. I want to get to that. One more call here, Pikeville, Kentucky. Michelle, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hello, Tom. And
hi.
I want to thank you for your program and being able to maintain such a level of civility in discussing, such a
We're trying.
Topic that we have to discuss today. I just quickly want to make a comment. Throughout my voting life, I have been a registered Republican. And within the last decade in particular, I have had increasing concern over what has happened to what I felt has been my political party. I literally feel like it's been hijacked by the fact that people within the Republican Party feel like they have to appeal to the extremists. The extremists, whether it's based upon religious belief or gun rights, and I feel as though the Republican Party just isn't representing most of us who want to be affiliated with the party because of fiscal conservatism. And, you know, even in the last administration prior to the Obama administration, I will openly say I voted for President Obama because I did not want to see our country go further into debt that I could already see what was happening under the Bush administration. And I wondered if perhaps you or your guests could comment on how I feel.
Well, I mean, you've obviously got several strains going there at once. You've got a history of voting Republican. You're trying to think it through and go differently. I think the thing everybody is focused on today, and Mark Potok, I want to come to you with this, is, you know, what's happened to the American political culture that by and large allowed for open discourse even when things were tough. It's not as though we haven't had angry debates in this country before. But what's getting us to this point? And what about this question over, you know, what's the source of this very kind of gun-oriented language and symbolism and imagery that's come into our conversation? Is it coming, as Mona says, from all over the place, Mark? Does it sort of lean one way or another?
I think it is an error. I think it's wrong to try and make an equivalency. You know, it's the Democrats are just as bad as the Republicans, and we just all need to be nice. You know, I mean, in many ways, I think the conversation we're in, or the yelling argument we're in as a country, perhaps goes right back to Ronald Reagan and the idea of the federal government as an enemy of the people, essentially, as or a necessary evil. I think, you know, so I don't think Reagan spoke in the way that some people speak today, certainly, but that was the beginning of this kind of trend, in a sense.
But you track all this stuff. You're on the web. You're watching the media. I mean, you're looking at what's going on. Where do you see, do you see language that, in your experience, this is your work, could provoke violence,
I
and where
language,
do you see it?
Mm-hmm. I think that language absolutely is out there, and I don't think that it's all cable news commentators and radio show talk show hosts. I think that, you know, when Sarah Palin says that the president is not attempting to pass a health care plan to extend health care to more people, but is figuring out ways to murder your grandmother, you know, that paints essentially a target on him. You know, when Newt Gingrich compares Muslims, all Muslims, to Nazis, you know, that demonizes Muslims in a way that is completely unreasonable. You know, when Michelle Bachmann, the congresswoman from Minnesota, says that that Obama is setting up re-education camps around the country, presumably to turn our kids into little Marxist robots, you know, again, it's a complete falsehood. And a lot of this does come from the air, too. I mean, you know, when you have Lou Dobbs on CNN, you know, a couple of years ago talking about Mexico's secret plans, the alleged secret plans to invade and reconquer the American Southwest.
Never mind Lou Dobbs. I mean, here's Glenn Beck saying, I'm thinking about killing Michael Moore, and I'm wondering if I could kill him myself or if I would need to hire somebody to do it.
That's right.
Maybe that's a joke.
Mike Savage on the West Coast, yeah. You know, talking about the people who should be rubbed out and so on.
Bill McKenzie, let me bring it to you. I mean, people say all kinds of things, and yet we have a tradition of free speech in this country, very vigorous speech. Here's a comment on our website from Craig. He says, let's be cautious as to how we react. To paraphrase the historical saying, I may not agree with Sarah Palin on everything she said, but I would fight to the death for her right to say it. But still, you know, Bill, I've spent time in the Balkans. We saw what happened there. Time in Rwanda, you start people calling people whatever it is, dehumanizing them. You call them cockroaches, and the next thing you knew in Rwanda, there were an awful lot of people dead. Language matters, Bill.
No argument with you. I agree. It does. But, I think in listening to this conversation, I think that what you're trying to get at is you want people to be precise here, and you think that it is the right wing that is fueling much of the angry rhetoric today. I'm going to agree with you. I think over the last couple of years it has been. But if you listen to what Mona was saying, I think she also has a legitimate point.
Mm-hmm.
Even if Democrats aren't using gun language, let's say, if you look at it over the continuum over the last 8 years or so, pre-Obama, you're going to find some pretty grotesque stuff said about Bush and some pretty grotesque stuff said about Republicans. I'll concede the point they weren't saying something that would use, you know, crosshairs or something like that. But Bush was talked about as being Hitler, you know, as one example. Mm. You know, so there's enough sin on both sides, different types of sins perhaps, but enough sin on both sides for people to kind of take a step back and say, how can we have a conversation where we can agree and disagree without demonizing our opponents? How can you have a conversation mm-hmm. where you say, and that, you know, I really disagree with Obama's health care law in these specific areas, and I think we're better off as a country to try to retool that part of the bill without being an attack personally on Obama.
I am so for that. I mean, we've got to be able to have really serious, deep, difficult
and
debates
I'll tell you
here.
And I tell you who I think is doing a good job with it. You listen to people like Paul Ryan. You know, he's
Wisconsin.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Republican of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. He's attacking Obama on the ideas that he has. He's not attacking Obama personally, and I like that. And I may not agree with Paul Ryan all the time, but I love the fact that he's engaging the debate at the level of ideas and saying that he thinks and trying to make the argument, these ideas aren't right, but here are some ideas that I think are right. That's the kind of conversation we need to have.
But Jack, is it time to call out the people who are, wherever they come from, who interject this real sort of violent, hyper-incendiary language in here? I mean, if that's what corrupts a serious, deep debate, can you call them out without putting a damper on the very vigorous First Amendment conference, you know, debates that America has at its core.
I think you can, but who's to do the calling out? I've been struck just listening over the weekend at people who were, you know, sort of representing themselves as disinterested, deploring what happened and connecting it with this climate of paranoia and fear on the right. And I must say, I feel those impulses myself. But the people that were saying it weren't disinterested. You know, they had their views. They wanted certain views advanced. And so I think it's very hard to find the Archimedean point, the neutral arbiter who will say, now that's going too far and that's not too that's why I made the point initially about the electorate. The voters decide. And when they say no to some of these candidates, the candidates have got to get the message. Politicians want to win. And if they sense that they're going to lose by, you know, going too far, they won't go too far. And so I find that you don't see that on the media. There's no too far for Rush Limbaugh. There's no too far for Michael Savage. There is in American politics. And I think that's a self-corrective mechanism built into the cake.
I pray so. Let me get a caller right here, if I may. Paul in Newton, Massachusetts. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yeah. The Republicans, and I'm sorry, the people on the right, sound to me like that police chief from, I think, the movie The Maltese Falcon. I'm shocked that there's political assassination going on here. They want it all ways. They want it both ways. While I'm on the phone waiting for you guys, I'm looking at Rush Limbaugh's website. There's Al Gore with Armageddon written over his head and the planet blowing up. There's a little, what do you call it, dog tag with Rush and a gun sight, 24/7, written inside it. And it's just ridiculous that they want to be able to do their talk and not have to pay any consequences for it. I don't buy it. They're wrong. Sarah Palin's wrong. They're getting to grow up and act like adults.
Paul, I got it. We've got big problems in this country. It's going to take a lot of difficult work to figure them out. If we're just fighting in a bloody tumble on the floor, how do we get them fixed? Steve in West Haven, Connecticut. Steve, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, everyone. Excellent conversation today. Let me just quickly say, I know we're running out of time. I'm 61 years old. I'm left of center. And I just want to say I think the right wing owns this one. They don't own this incident, this unfortunate assassination and all those. No, they don't own that. Mm-hmm. That remains to be seen. But what they own is what's currently going on today, what the Kool-Aid we're all drinking and the air we're breathing is just laced with hate speech and violence and guns and crosshairs. They own that. Now, having said that, and having also said that I am left of center, and some of my friends think I'm way left, I also am 61 years old, and I remember when the left owned it. The Weathermen and the Black Panthers and SDS and cops got shot. Policemen were shot. Banks were robbed. It was terrible.
But in those days, the FBI was sicked on those people. Is the FBI following, I don't know, some of these people in the mainstream now?
And the point I want to quickly make, though, is that there's a pendulum swing, and right now, I'm sorry, the ball is in the right's court. Now, what's unfortunate now is that eventually I think this ball might go back to the left's court, and then it will be in their lap.
I hope not. I don't think we can afford it as a country. We've got to sober up and really come to grips with what we have in front of us as national challenges. Brendan, Harrisonburg, Virginia, you're on the air, Brendan.
Hi, Tom. I was a student at Virginia Tech in my senior year in 2007 when the massacre occurred.
Yeah.
And I see a lot of similarities with how society reacts when these tragedies occur. And what I see is there's always a lot of debate and finger-pointing, and I find it detracts from the issue because what this is it's a very sick young man. And honestly, it really wouldn't matter what was happening in the country. He had his reasons to shoot just like as the guy at Virginia Tech did.
You really think so? But he targeted a congressperson, right? Isn't that different?
Being a rational person, I don't know what his motives were. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's important to ask questions to say, hey, is the political rhetoric getting too inflammatory? Where are we headed as a society? But what I do find, what I came back to after my struggle trying to make sense of the tragedy at Virginia Tech was that it's just a consequence of free society. And it's the fact that we're not 100% safe, even though we want a safeguard. It's just you've got to be aware, and I do think that in politics now they do have to start understanding that, hey, this is out there. People think that they can go and mow down people and go down in a blaze of glory, and they have to take steps.
Brendan, God love you, but I don't think we can accept this as just a part of our politics. I don't think personally that democracy works if semi-automatic weapons are mowing down congressmen at a meeting with constituents. Bill McKenzie, how do we sober up as a country? We've got issues to deal with. We can't be shooting each other over them. We've got to solve them.
Yeah, well, I think to answer to Jack's point, which is your question too, I think each side needs to police their own. Jack's point was, well, who does the policing? I think that each side has to police their own, and I don't know exactly how you do it other than that you try to send signals from the top, from people like Boehner or President Obama, to send signals to each side to cool it.
But those were the ones who lost in the GOP last time, weren't they? I mean, we talked about those sort of cool it guys were the ones who lost in the midterms. We talked to Senator Bob Bennett there. He's out.
Right. But as Jack pointed out, there are also some people who were trying to throw flames on, get the flames going, like Sharron Angle and Nevada.
Yeah, they lost too. True.
And the voters do play a role in throwing these people out. I mean, if you look at the last election, independents moved from Democrats in 08 to Republicans in 2010. So they're going to move and sort this thing out some. But meanwhile, I think that each side has a responsibility to call their own out. You know, and I throw out an example, William F. Buckley, who's as conservative as it came, really tried to drive the nuts out of the conservative movement back in the 50s so the conservative movement would have a degree of respect. And I think each side has to police their own.
Jack, maybe it's the watershed. Maybe it's the wake-up call, but who knows how to call that? Entirely unclear to me sitting here today, but I pray and hope so.
I do, too. And I think I was very heartened by Speaker Boehner's statement. I thought it was it was right on tone. And I hope we can hear more of that. You know, he did sideline Michelle Bachmann. She made a move to get into the leadership. He nixed it. I think that was significant.
Voters, citizens, listeners, we all have a responsibility in this to keep it cool, keep it sober. We've got big issues. Let's take them on directly, not this way. Bill McKenzie with the Dallas Morning News and Mark Potok at the Southern Poverty Law Center, thanks to each of you for being with us. And Jack, thanks to you as well. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.